Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hello there. How are you doing? All well? You're looking rather fabulous. We're back with another episode of Spin the Rally Pod. I'm rally fan Lisa O'Sullivan. And we're getting to grips with the Grand Prix of Gravel and Rally Estonia. Colin Clark, voice of Rally, David Evans, senior staff writer for Dirtfish.com, and our marvellous former motorsport team boss, George Donaldson, all in attendance, ready to enthuse and get all excited about Rally Estonia. And I'm going to start, chaps. Two things that I noticed very outstanding from a distance. It looked like it was very hot where you were in Estonia, and it looked like lots and lots of fans were enjoying rally just like we used to do in pre-COVID days.
Yeah, it was great, Lisa. Oh, by the way, you saying we're all looking marvellous this morning, that didn't apply to me, George and David, obviously. Well, I hope it didn't.
No, it's far too early.
yeah, Estonia was great, and you're absolutely right. It was fantastic to see the fans back out on the stages. You know, we saw fans in limited numbers, and we've seen them throughout the year, but there were a lot of fans back in Estonia, and yeah, it felt, you know, what was the big thing was that we actually saw spectators back in the service park, and that was the first time we've seen that on a rally since Mexico last year.
It looked like a proper start of a rally,
with the whole town centre start. Well, you know, it wasn't town centre, but it was in this incredible exhibition National Museum Centre. It's built on an old airbase, and it's a fantastic piece of architecture, this museum, and the service park is there, and they built this. It looked like a rock concert venue, David, didn't it? It was incredible the effort they'd put into it, and the whole production and the setting and all the rest at the start, it got you in the mood, that's for sure.
It did, but don't forget, Cole, there was a sort of parade, wasn't there, on the Wednesday afternoon as well,
yeah.
Right in the centre of Tartu, which they bought all of the...
That's the stuff I've seen the pictures of.
Yeah, no, it was cool, and all of the people dancing in their national dress and stuff. It felt almost normal again. You know, you'd probably, in terms of a crowd, the crowd wasn't quite as big as the non-spectator Croatia. It was great. And it was really weird because I was looking back through pictures yesterday to put with stories and stuff. And in the archive of pictures, I was looking at something and, well, which event's that? Because we got so used to seeing what Estonia looks like in sort of autumn last year. We kind of collated all of those pictures. But the pictures from this year look completely different because the gravel is such a totally different colour. It's so much lighter. There's so much more dust. It was a very, very different rally, a very different nature of rally this year, I'd have to say.
The other big question, David, that I have for you, still wearing the corduroy and the nice full-length jumper?
No, I have to say the jumper was dispatched pretty sharpish on whatever day we arrived. It was absolutely baking. It was ridiculously hot.
David.
It shouldn't be that hot. It shouldn't be allowed.
It shouldn't, but it took you a little while to be persuaded to ditch the jumper. A little while.
I think it was when I went upstairs to the bedroom in my apartment, and it was about 82 degrees Celsius or something. It was horrendous. So the jumper had to go, and we kind of got used to it a little bit. No, we didn't actually. Totally didn't get used to it. But it did. It tailed off a bit as Saturday and Sunday were a tiny bit cooler. It was hot. There was one moment, I think, which, you know, I thought I'd got the heat sussed. With no air conditioning, I decided to put my pillow in the fridge, which worked for 5 minutes, gave me 5 minutes decent sleep.
I was a bit worried what else was in there, because in the pre-event podcast that never actually made it on air, there was an awful lot of laundry being popped in the fridge.
I think that was the just before I went in the shower. I mean, it was so hot. You'd go in the shower, you'd come out, and literally you were sweating straight away after a cold shower. So I put my pants, socks, and shirt in the fridge as well. It was surprisingly refreshing, I have to say, but only briefly, because then again you sort of moved.
The briefs were briefly refreshing.
They were. Oh. They were. Sorry.
It was toasty back in the UK too, wasn't it, George? George, now you as always studied the event from afar. Where do you want to start? Well, Rally Estonia.
I would start with Katsuta's retirement, actually. Which, I mean, well, first of all, brilliant performance from him. I was worried about him because I thought, you know, it takes years to build up those extra... And
can you explain that for people who didn't
so
see it?
Katsuta, obviously coming off the back of his increasing performance every event, and it's a measurable increase in performance we're seeing every event, and it concerns me that that's too much. It's too big a step each time. You're looking for a tiny little incremental improvement building on the experience so that you don't make any mistakes. And so it concerned me that, you know, he was going to Estonia with an idea that he could actually almost win. And whilst I'm quite sure he's capable of pushing himself there and he has the skill level to take himself there very close to it now, and, you know, infinitesimally close to it, the concern always is that you just make a wee mistake because you don't have that depth of experience, and it takes years to get that depth of experience. We just need to look at Seb Ogier to see what that experience means and what actually how to quantify it. You don't need to look any further than that man and his predecessors. You know, many predecessors you can say the same thing of. They don't make these mistakes. You can even put that down to Ott Tanak. You know, Ott Tanak, you know, he picked up a puncture. Okay, that was maybe unlucky. Maybe he picked it up, but certainly his second mistake was just, you know, pushing too far, too fast.
At the wrong time, George. At the wrong time. That was the biggest mistake,
you
know, for me.
And you would say in 2 or 3 years' time, Ott Tanak will not be making those mistakes. He'll be a machine. He'll be doing what Seb Ogier is capable of doing. So anyway, I was concerned about young Katsuta just pushing a little bit too hard on this event, given that, you know, it's really, really fast pace, and the type of accidents you have on these long, fast corners can be absolutely enormous. And then he goes and makes that little mistake, if you like. I mean, to be honest, I didn't actually manage to see any footage of the jump where Dan was injured, obviously over a bad landing on a jump. Dan got a bit hurt, and on the next road section they decided to retire because Dan had some, I think, did he have some numbness down one side? I read.
Yeah, I had some pins and needles, I think.
Pins and needles, probably just a little bit of a smack. But anyway, so the team did the right thing and withdrew him and had him checked out. But at the end of the day, I'm thinking, I actually checked with Dan. I said, Dan, was it one of the normal jumps or was it one of these dreadful man-made things? He said, oh, it was a dreadful man-made one, George. So why on earth are the organisers of a fabulous rally in an incredible environment putting in artificial jumps, which then cause this type of issue? And then the other thing I've just hark back to, I mean, Dan's a pretty fit, not overweight person, you know. Okay, he's quite tall, so perhaps a little bit vulnerable that way. But how have we still got co-drivers getting injuries in cars from jumps? Yeah. You know, they're sitting on a seat, well strapped in, well protected from impact. And I'll bet you that, so it'll be a carbon fibre seat or a Kevlar carbon fibre seat, which is probably, I mean, I've not seen it, so I can't comment accurately, but in the past they've been sitting literally, you know, a few millimetres off the car floor, which in itself is a couple of millimetre thick steel. There's not much below that, perhaps a Kevlar guard below that, not very thick, not set to absorb shock.
They are now a good bit higher.
They are. They have been
And in the new cars, they'll be even higher, won't they, David?
Good. Thank goodness for that.
Yeah, 15 centimetres.
Yeah.
Really? 15?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's enormous. Well, that's brilliant.
But, George, here's the thing. This is one thing we really can't get into right now, but they're now 15 centimetres off the floor. And I think, Cole, is it only 10 centimetres from head to roof or something like that?
This is the only thing, absolutely. So, and the drivers are, yes, drivers, 10 centimetres. They've given a little more clearance from the ground in terms of where the seating is, but then they've taken it from the top, which for some people is even more of a worry. But we'll not, as you say, David, get into that just now. But can I just go back to Katsuta, George?
Yes, go back to Katsuta.
And say, I thought he absolutely did the right thing, which can't have been easy.
Terribly difficult.
I've said in my driver ratings, I'm not convinced, looking through history, I'm not talking about necessarily the current crop of drivers, I'm not convinced that every driver would have done the same thing, would have been so easily persuaded to stop in a situation. I'm not convinced, David.
I think this one was, some of these occasions, Cole, it's not, the driver doesn't have to be convinced. You know, the co-driver simply really can't go on. I've spoken to Dan a couple of times, and Dan said, Katsuta-san said, how are you? And he's like, yeah, not great. And he said, shall we carry on? No, not great. And it was one of those moments that he just knew that it wasn't wasn't sensible.
Yeah, fair play.
Just George, you are exactly right, George, about these jumps. And we only have to go back 2 years to see Elvin Evans with a broken back, and lots of other. If we go down the entry list, there would have been numerous co-drivers not quite as fit as Dan and Elvin who would have suffered. I spoke to Omar Avi yesterday and asked about the jumps, and he said they will look at everything for next year. We've got quite a long piece. I have to say, Omar Avi is the guy who runs the rally director, a former driver himself, just incredibly rigorous in their post-event debrief. They're looking at everything. When I actually spoke to him yesterday, he was in the middle of a forest on the grading machine, going through the roads, just making sure that everything was getting back to normal. So they will look at it. The reason we had these jumps in the first place, George, was because this was a warm-up event for Finland. And the teams came to Estonia because they had similar style roads, but it didn't quite have the jumps. So the organisers determined to make the event as good as they possibly could to bring the championship manufacturers. They added these little kickers on the top of the jumps. But the trouble is, but the problem is, you have probably bigger jumps in Finland, but you don't have that natural profile of the road that you need.
Yeah.
And
you land past and it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
It's like a ski jumper out jumping the hill, isn't it? But David, here's the thing. You and I drove a number of stages, didn't we? And what absolutely astonished me, look, I get why organisers put jumps in front of spectator areas. You know, they want to sell tickets, they want to get the crowds in, all the rest, they want it to look spectacular for the television. I get that. And you know, I'm happy to argue there's a place for that. Yeah. I'm not a fan of anything man-made in rallying, but I can see the need for it. But, you know, we're in the middle of the forest where you will not see a single spectator. You know, trees either side, no room for spectator areas, and they put these jumps in places where, you know, they're never going to be in that horrible parenthesis that you and I hate, David, you know, appreciated by spectators. So I think there's definitely a bit of compromise that the organisers can find for the next event. They can take a whole load of them out, I'm sure. And some of them, I mean, that, remember we came out of that quarry, David, on the stage, what was it, stage 10? And it was like a Toblerone. It was like a massive piece of Toblerone. It was straight up and straight down. And it was just quite ridiculous.
That just set a car into a somersault, just about.
Only silly drivers will go over that sort of, and silly drivers. I remember the one on is it Uria in Finland? That's very similar. It's straight up, you're literally looking at the sky. And the only person to ever, and certainly in my memory, do anything silly there was Novikov, because at times that's the sort of thing he did. But no, I think it's great that they're looking at them, and I think they need to look at them because, they were unnecessary. They were really unnecessary in places. The rally's got its own character now, particularly with the introduction of these new stages that they put in south of, north of
Tartu.
Where were we? Too early in the morning. Tartu. Thank you, David. Too early. The rally is very much developing its own character. It doesn't need to replicate anything else.
I agree with that.
Let's move on to someone else who didn't, before we get to the positive, someone else who didn't get, shall we say, get to grips with the road, and Oit Tanak. Another disappointing rally for him.
It absolutely was. Yeah. You know, there's no way of dressing it up. He was expected to deliver more. He was expected to deliver back-to-back wins. It was disappointing, wasn't it? He led after the first stage proper, then a puncture, and then tried to make up that time. It's, you know, we saw Tanak, didn't we, Cole, after the first puncture. And he was pretty relaxed, leaning against a wall, not too stressed. You know, he dropped 30 seconds, but you kind of expected that he would just make that time back. Interestingly, it was a similar amount of time that Kalle-Rovan Pärä lost on the first stage proper, or the second stage, last year. And Kalle didn't make it back. But you just had this sense that Oit would manage it.
Yeah, he was 23 down, David, 23, 24 down after that stage. And you're right, you did get the feeling he would manage it. And then he was, how would you describe him in the next stage? Well, reckless? You know, he only had one spare. He'd driven brilliantly. We're not talking about a rear puncture. And we often see drivers, driving through stages at some pace with rear punctures, you know, because you can, the steering's at the front of the car clearly. You can control it pretty well, but when you're down to the rim on the front right to push on at the pace that Tanak achieved in that stage, took some bravery and some skill, and he did brilliantly. He did brilliantly to keep himself very, very much in the fight. And then lack of judgment in the next stage is all you can see. He's pushing way too hard, way, way too hard, trying to get all that time back potentially, not in the next stage, but, you know, he had the whole rally to make up that time. And you question the judgment. You have to question the judgment to make that mistake so soon after a brilliant bit of retrieval, if you like, in terms of the situation.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely, yeah. Cool.
You do. I haven't watched his onboard through that stage. So, I can't say if he was on the ragged edge all the way through or if it was one corner that caught him out. I don't know. But it was, you're right. You know, he had a long time to pull that time back. And ultimately, it was, you know, the disappointment of a nation, wasn't it? It was almost like
palpable.
Denied us all an incredible battle, because it would have been an amazing battle, I'm sure.
It was Estonia's own Euro 2020 England moment, wasn't it?
It wasn't coming home, wasn't. David. It wasn't coming home.
It was coming Rome, I think, pointed out as a spelling mistake, that one.
He can get his revenge in Finland later in the year.
George, what would you be saying to your driver as the boss?
As the boss, sympathising with him, because he quite honestly he's going to need a little bit of sympathy, because he's got to realise just what a silly thing he's done, you know. Although you say that, you know, David, as you said, we've not looked at the in-car footage. I didn't look at the in-car. Well, I did actually look at the in-car footage of it. Did he just try and did he think he could get away with it and get round, and there was enough room if he got it wrong, there was enough room to survive and get back on, which quite clearly as soon as he was off the road he was finding a way back on. He wasn't going to lose much time from that incident as it was. It was only the fact that he took the radiator off coming back onto the road, wasn't it? So yeah, maybe he thought that was a place that he could push. I mean, he'd be thinking, okay, 16, 17 seconds down, I need to get a second or two every stage here, because he doesn't actually think he's going to get 5 or 6 seconds on any stage. He's going to have to nibble on every single stage. So that's what would have led him into pushing on that stage, even with just one spare, rather than just taking that holding pattern. It's easy to make that. What would I say to my driver? I'd say, well, I'll take a refund of a tenth of your fee, thank you very much.
but David, what do you think? I mean, it's an interesting thought, George, you know, because things are beginning to look a little bit tricky for Hyundai, you know, in terms of the manufacturers. They were very, very close, you know, ridiculously close to a great result in Safari. And this one was a bit of a banker for them. Breen, they knew, would go well. Tanak had to be the favourite. Adamo must be if he didn't have a few harsh words, he did well to keep them in, because he must be bitterly disappointed. They could have been back in the fight. And what's happened? Yeah. They've slipped further behind.
I don't really see how you can say that, Cole, when, you know, they were up against Toyota, arguably the fastest rally car that has been made.
David, I'll tell you why you can say it. No. We can easily say it, because we know how quick that car is in those conditions. We saw it in Sweden. Obviously, it's snow and ice, but similar, fast and flowing. We saw it last year. We saw it very much in Estonia 8 months ago. It was a Breen, it was a 1-2 for Hyundai. We know that that car is quick. We but know it's quick. And you can't, he was favourite. There's no question.
No, he wasn't. Tanak, how can he favorite. Be, Cole? Kalle Rovanperä was right there with him.
David, Kalle Rovanperä was there with him. I agree with that entirely. He was there with him, but given, even with that 23, 24 seconds he was down after stage two, I'd have still put money on Tanak getting that time I think Tanak would have been there or thereabouts. You look at his time, as you quite rightly pointed out to me on Saturday.
On Friday.
The minute. Now, it's very... And I refuse. Saturday, yeah. I refuse. Saturday. I refuse to actually put too much into that those Saturday times, because it's entirely different situations. You know, one driver fighting for the win, the other one fighting to prove that he wasn't a halfwit on the Friday and that he could have won. It's very different, but he was a minute quicker than anyone.
The data on that was slightly erroneous, Cole. He wasn't. I went back and checked. I think it was about 40 seconds or something.
Don't tell me these things unless you're sure of them, David, because you know I quote you as
remember,
being gospel.
I remember when you were saying that in the review, still, thinking, oops, don't give it slaps.
No, still, 40 seconds is still enormously impressive.
You know, Cole, I've just got to say it. I think you're wrong. For Hyundai to go to a really quick rally and expect to dominate, expect to pull a lot of points back on a team like Toyota, where we know that they have a very, very, very strong car. We know that they have Sebastian Ogier, one of the most canny drivers who can pull a rally round and pick up some points, you know.
David, the only driver who drove that car quicker than the Hyundais was Rovanperä. Both Evans and Ogier were disappointing in their Toyotas. So I'm not accepting the fact that you're saying that the Toyota was quicker. It was quicker in the hands of
Rovanperä. Hang on, that wasn't the question. The question was, you know, would Hyundai expect, it was foolish for them to expect to go and dominate on a rally like this.
At all.
I don't think that's just another bit of speculation, isn't it? Because we don't know what Hyundai were expecting. Were they shouting from the top of the trees, we're going to win this, we're going to get a 1-2? I suspect not. They would be going hoping that they could get the very best possible result. And at the moment, I suspect they're just happy to get themselves back on a level playing field, get themselves back on some concrete type of performance and reliability platform, and then...
They haven't got time for that, George. They haven't got time for that. They have to start winning rallies. They haven't got time for that. Well, the Drivers' Championship is now out of reach. They have to start winning rallies, otherwise we're going to give Toyota... in Latvala's first year, the double.
It's very possible.
I think, you know, at this stage, when we've still got five rounds, nothing is out of reach. You know, if...
Four, according to... I don't know if Tanak got his maths wrong, but he said four at the end of the event. Does he know something we don't?
Well, I suppose he's wondering if Japan will happen, but, you know, I'm sure there's time. If Japan doesn't happen, there is time to find a replacement. But, you know, one DNF from Ogier is enough to kind of pull everybody back into it.
Yeah, true.
I'm
being cantankerous, David. It's very early. It's very early.
I'm still in bed. I like it.
Who else is still in bed? Who else is still in bed?
No, I actually had to stand up and walk out to the garden to my studio. But it's a glorious morning, I have to say, in the UK. Can we open that lovely, big, dusty tome that we have in the WRC history section? Look where that brand new page has been turned over, and the brand new name of Kalle Rovanperä written as a winner and the youngest ever. And boy, that page is going to fill up over the years, isn't it?
Yeah, he's undoubtedly, it's the first of very many wins. excuse me, we talked about this a lot, and the thing that was marked was the speed that he found, incredible speed immediately. Yeah. And then the control that he asserted over the event.
He's so cool.
Yeah, he was.
He really is.
You know, yeah, not totally, at no point.
Totally.
did you fear that things could go wrong? He took everything in his stride. Okay.
It was a little ragged at times, David, but you're right. You never felt it was going to go particularly wrong, but it was. He had some big moments, particularly that corner that Sean Johnson had his enormous, enormous crash on. And thank goodness Sean and Alex are okay. Robin Perra had a big one there as well, if you watch the onboards, but he was yeah, assured, wasn't he? He was assured, and he knew it was his. You knew it was his before the event.
But
that's kind of
my thing, Col, is that I genuinely believed that he now, it's just insane. But you talked to Sebastian Ogier about it, and I said to Seb, you know, what about this victory? And he said, well, actually, you know, joking aside, he's been driving for 13 years. And it's easy to forget that. And okay, only 17, 18 months at the very highest level. But the guy has got so much experience of how cars work, and clearly so much, if we believe in natural ability, he's got that in spades, hasn't he? And he's got a character and a temperament that nothing will ruffle him. You look at, you know, one thing that was incredible, Cole, when we were doing an interview with him or just chatting to him at the finish, I think it was Andreas Mikkelsen was going over the ramp and celebrating winning WRC2. And those ridiculous fireworks went off. And you and I jumped again about 6 inches into the air. Kelly Rompera, these...
Showing your age
maybe,
now.
Maybe.
Bombs are exploding just, you know, 30 foot in the air. He didn't even flinch. And you just think, crikey, you know, he is one very, very, very cool customer.
He is. But George, back in your day when you were, you know, just getting into rallying, and then when you were, you know, building your career in rallying, it was very much the norm that the drivers had to serve their apprenticeship, didn't they? And you didn't expect to see winners until, what, maybe their mid-20s,
well,
maybe even late 20s.
Crikey, even now, Colin, I mean, a lot of the top drivers haven't won a rally until they're pretty well 30. I mean,
yeah,
Marcus Grönholm,
yeah,
okay, I suppose it's now 20 years old, really, in terms of his professional career. But he didn't win his first rally until he was well over 30.
Is that to do with the fact that a team's taken a chance on a young driver?
And it's opportunity.
Taking a chance on a young driver is very, very difficult, and it's fraught with difficulty. I mean, look at Esa-Pekka, look at Sunderland, and there's dozens and dozens of drivers that you can actually highlight. You know, they win one rally or they perform very well for a couple of events, and then it just all goes to crap. And that's basically what happens there, is they start to try and step ahead of their own experience, and they then get confused as to where they are. I mean, I'm sure we can talk about Timo Sunderland later in the event, but I mean, the drivers get confused and befuddled by their own circumstance. And we've seen it many times. Very, very few of them have got the temerity to pull it through and deliver this type of ice cool performance that Cali did, which is, you know, I mean, it genuinely is. I mean, the sort of performance we saw from him was Ogier-esque, wasn't it?
Yeah.
But and I think Ogier is right, you know, Cali has been driving cars for 15 years, and that's what counts for everything. He's probably been driving cars longer than Timo Sunenen, potentially. You know, in terms of kilometres, he might have more kilometres than Timo Sunenen, I don't know, but, you know, it's all to do with just what you've got under your belt. And it is rallying is odd like that. That's why I worry about Katsuta, because, you know, he's pushing out. I think, you know, his performance is even more remarkable than Cali's in some ways, to my mind.
George, can I argue with you there? I'm in quite a cantankerous mood this morning. That's not good, is it, guys and girls?
No, that's good. We like
roll
it.
Roll over and well, go back to sleep.
As long as you're wrong and we can all shout you down, that's fine.
Yeah, that's
good. No, I probably am wrong, but I disagree with you on the what's under your belt bit. I think Cali's proving that with certain individuals who have a certain God-given talent, it's not necessarily about what's under the belt. It's about what you can. What you've got in your head, and he's got
absolutely.
In his head.
Absolutely, it's what too.
But also, he's
been gifted a huge amount of experience from a professional driver, his dad, who basically put him into all these cars and told him what he needed to be doing. So right. And he's obviously got the personality where he can listen to that, take it in, process it, and fire out. Excuse me a second. I've got a cat making a noise in the room.
Have you got the litter tray there, George?
No, but he likes chomping on. He likes chomping on cellophane.
This is a totally different side of you, George Donaldson, that others are seeing. I mean, I've seen you playing with this little kitten, and it was a totally different George Donaldson I saw then.
Ah, well, a lovely little cat. I never had a cat before, actually. We've had dogs, and we actually just lost our dog, actually, not long after we got the cat.
Oh, that's sad.
Yeah, that happens. It was old, and it was time, sadly. But anyway, the little cat is gorgeous. Now he's scratching at the door to get back in. God save us.
Welcome to Country File.
Country File, yeah, absolutely. So Colin, I think I'm right. It is down to an experience, whether you get that experience behind the wheel, whether you actually get it anecdotally from your instructor. And remember that driving, motorsport, rally specifically, one of the few sports where there's very little coaching undertaken. So he's been coached. He's absolutely been he's a coached driver. Mm-hmm. And
here's the thing.
That's worth a huge amount, I think. And that's why we've got him where he is. I mean, he's remarkable. Shooty's amazing. But he's a product of the sum total of all the parts that's been put into him. And it's immense. And I think that was Seb's point was that. So
very good. That's a very good way of putting it.
Yeah.
Tanak, I've just done some quick maths. I think Tanak was 29 when he took his first win. I think Elvin was, give or take a few days, more or less the same age.
Yeah.
9 years younger.
Wow.
You look at Toivonen was 24, Latvala was 22, Rovan Perä is 20, all Finns, three of them. Is that it? Can you guys see that record being beaten? It's hard. Can you, Dave? Genuinely?
Yeah, but...
Why did you say that? I mean, from everything that George has said,
excuse me,
you'd have to suggest
it's the opportunity thing that you mentioned there, David, as well, is the fact that you can prove to a team that you're responsible enough at that age to get behind the wheel.
And the opportunity. Callie was fortunate, the opportunity is with Toyota. David, I don't see it being beaten.
Yeah, but he's
really not.
He's 20 and quite a few days, Cole, so... You know, who's to say that who's to say that Calais's son isn't going to be? You know, Calais could have won Estonia last year. He could have won.
Let's imagine that Calais was driving for Hyundai on the part drive system that Hyundai operated.
It wouldn't happen then.
The previous four events that he'd had, would that have kept him in a drive, or would he have been dropped for Breen? Or Danny Sordo, on the basis of the previous four events.
Yeah, but those four events, I can't remember exactly, but only really Croatia was his fault, wasn't it?
Doesn't matter. You make your own luck. That's the story.
You'd have to say Safari was his fault. Others got through that vesh.
Yeah.
He didn't get through.
That does kind of nudge us quite nicely onto Craig Breen. Surely he should have a full time drive next year.
Yeah, he certainly deserves it, doesn't he? And that was some speed. I remember talking to Adamo before the event and saying to Andrea, what do you expect from Craig? And he said the same, what he did last year. You know, if you look back to what he did with that second place last year, he hadn't been in the car since, I think, GB, so almost the same 10 months earlier. And so he got back in the car and did it again. But the difference was, of course, this time that just a couple of weeks before, everybody else had been in the car in Safari. A couple of weeks before that, everybody had been in the car in Sardinia. A couple of weeks before that, everybody had been in the car in Portugal. He hadn't. But what he had done is he had been in Latvia on Rally Liepāja in an R5 car. So he'd had some seat time, but just in the wrong car, but on the right roads. But regardless...
Poland was a good one for him. Poland was really fast. And that was okay, the wrong car, as you say, but Poland was, in some ways, a very similar rally, wasn't it, David?
And Latvia is as well. But the pressure... Quick roads.
Yeah, true. But the pressure was on him. The pressure was on Breen. And I never fail to be amazed by how he deals with it. He stays very, very calm. He's still quite clearly you know, enjoys the experience, even with that amount of pressure, knowing that, you know, it is the shop window, it is his one opportunity to shine. Potentially he'll get another one, I'm sure, in Finland. But his demeanour always amazes me, Craig Breen. He is a joy to be around, and with the pressure that's on him.
Well, all that pressure that... Yeah, I mean, sorry, Colin, I'm interrupting you there.
Yeah, no,
apologies.
Go on,
well, I was just going to say, just to echo your point is, you know, you've been talking about M Sports drives for next year. Surely to goodness, Craig Breen's available. Mm-hmm. You know, surely to goodness, he's worth a full-time drive in that new Ford.
You look at that and you kind of think, actually... You're dead right there, Cole, because sometimes we overlook Craig Breen, don't we? And Craig just delivers these astonishing performances. There was huge pressure on everybody, on Calais and on Oit. And once Craig was into that position, the pressure was massive for him to stay there. And he just did it. And again, the same as Calais, you never really doubted it. It was there was a bit of a moment on the Saturday night where he tapped. Or slapped to one of the rocks.
Tapped. It was a boulder. It was, you know, I tried to say to Adamo after that, you know, surely, you know, it must have been a heart and mouth moment for all of the Hyundai team. But they must have taken some encouragement from the fact that that car just didn't crumple. I've never seen a car hit such an enormous rock and continue on. It was half the size of the front of the car. It was enormous. And, you know, the boulder moved, which I guess is probably why it did survive. You know, it moved. But, you know, other than that, he looked very assured. He didn't, you know, Robin Perra looked ragged at times. Breen didn't look ragged at all in the stages. He was absolutely bang on, inch perfect on every corner. His judgment was perfect. You know, he did a great job. He did a fantastic job. And it just seems wrong that he's not.
And also, don't forget, you know, he jumped into that car with only one day of testing on the Pirellis, on the Scorpions.
Yeah.
And again, and had absolutely no issues with those tyres, which is a great testament and compliment to what Pirelli have done with them. It was a startling performance again, but it shouldn't be because he did exactly the same 10 months ago. So fingers crossed. He's in for Ypres. Of course he is in for Ypres. That's one that I'm really looking forward to, I have to say.
Ypres is quite exciting.
Yeah. Ypres could be a big result for Hyundai. It could be the big one they need, couldn't it? You know, it's got to be... Neuville's
it's got to be
1-2-3,
Colin.
Got to be favourite.
1-2-3.
I've won that rally four times, Colin. That stopped you dead, didn't it?
What did you say, George?
I've won that rally four times as a team manager.
He's rubbing his ears there.
Wow. No, my headphones just broke up as you were saying that.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. It's the most remarkable event tactically as well. The weather can change so quickly. The options with tyres. I think that was one of the...
So here's the thing. Here's the thing, George and David. Mm. You know, Alain Pinasse. Okay, so I don't think we're ever going to find out exactly what happened there at Hyundai with Alain Pinasse. But would you not fight tooth and nail to keep him on for one more event? You know, for Ypres. Surely that would make a lot of sense.
That's the one event he probably can't work on, isn't it?
Yeah, well, probably. I mean, as I was making that point, that is exactly what I was thinking.
Should we talk about M Sport?
Yep. A slightly mixed bag for M Sport. Mm. Great speed from Gus Greensmith again. You know, I really feel that we are genuinely getting somewhere now with Gus. Superb times on the Friday morning. Then a problem which put him out with the engine, I think water pump, something like that. And, you know, from there on, he was first on the road through Saturday, and by some spark plug miracle, was not first on the road on Sunday.
Incredible.
But just, you know, delivered a very encouraging event. And I think that Gus, by the end of the year, could be one that we're talking about a bit more. It's incredible, remarkable the amount of progress that he's made with Chris Patterson alongside him. And this is, you know, it's absolutely not to the detriment of Elliot Edmondson, as we said 100 times, you can't buy experience. But Chris Pat's got in the car and just is controlling the way the car works in terms of working environment, if you like. And Gus is clearly responding to it.
Quite often it's just a change that occasions that. I mean, you know, it's not even down to not I'm taking away anything from Chris, far from it, but, you know, it can just be a change, you know, and Chris will come in with his, you know, with a fresh perspective, and it just reinvigorates the whole atmosphere inside the car.
But here's what I found quite interesting. When we were talking to him, was it Saturday night, David? And Gus said it was whatever stage it was. That's the one that Chris told me, you know, it's basically or bust on this one. So I thought, crumbs. So it's the co-driver that's telling you which stages you're going to attack and which ones you're going to let it all hang out on. That's an unusual, as I can see it, quite an unusual situation. But it shows the trust, the absolute trust that he's got in Patterson to make the right calls. And I've seen it before. And I always said it about Chris Meek. What really concerned me at times about Chris Meek was his judgment and his ability to make the right decisions at the right times. And there was no doubting Chris Meek's talent and his ability and his bravery and his speed. For me, his judgment sometimes let him down. And it's a big, big thing. You know, judgment is part of the if you like, the ranges of experience that you need to be a successful rally driver. And you know, I kind of feel that it was the same with Greensmith. Greensmith lacked judgment, good judgment at times. And Chris Patterson being in the car there.
Yeah, he'll certainly bring that, Colin, 100%.
You know, and it's so important. And it doesn't matter how talented you are. And I've already mentioned Novikov. We've seen drivers like Novikov in the past who are blindingly fast, have appallingly bad judgment. And they go nowhere. They go absolutely nowhere. So it is encouraging, really encouraging from Greensmith. I'm not sure how far he can go. Can he win stages? Yeah, I think he probably can. Can he win rallies? Maybe. Maybe. We'll have to wait and see. But what he has to do is continue to improve. Like Katsuta, as you said, George, Katsuta is showing us rally after rally, you know, incremental steps forward. No really big steps backwards this year. That's been the big thing for me about Katsuta. He hasn't taken any steps backwards. And if Greensmith can follow in that mould, steps forward, steps forward, steps forward, without enormous leaps backwards, then, you know, we can't say where that's going to stop. And that might well stop when he gets to a performance level that allows him to push for wins. We'll have to wait and see. But the one who ain't pushing for wins, David, George, Lisa, is Sunin.
Yeah, poor old Timu.
You have to feel for him. You have to feel for him. He's lost. He's completely lost.
Very difficult to get that reset as well, I suspect, at this point.
Very, very difficult. And if he goes into Finland in this same kind of mindset, he's going to struggle, really struggle. And the frustration a little bit.
So what's his next event?
I think he is doing IPA in the Rally 2 car, and then they haven't made any decisions for Finland yet. But, you know, the frustration for me is that we've seen Teemu have speed in the past. We've seen him progress towards what we thought would be rally-winning potential. And it's just it's gone now. He just seems lost. Can he get it back? Broken. I don't know. But the frustration is that he talks too much about not having enough testing, not having enough preparation time. You know, Teemu, deal with it because there are other drivers. Yeah,
look at Breen. Absolutely. Just look at Craig Breen. Look at Craig Breen. No time on the tires. No testing.
Exactly.
Gets in the car.
And Adrian Formo has had a lot more testing for sure. A lot more seat time, but. You know, not as much as he would have wanted. And they had a good, you know, they had a day and a half of testing before Estonia. That's, you know, a good chunk of time. And, you know, yeah.
But there wasn't even a glimpse of anything, David. Even if we could look back and say, look at that stage. No. Look at that stage. He decided he was going to let it all hang out on that stage. And look at, that's what he can do. There wasn't even that. He finished 7 minutes. 7 minutes off the winning time without giving us anything to get positive about. In fact, he gave me a whole load more to be worried about. He was in that media zone on Saturday night, David, broken. He was broken. He was broken. And I hate to see drivers like that because A, it makes you feel a little guilty about asking particular questions, but B, it makes you concerned for them. You know, that they are as broken as Sunin looked.
He's fundamentally a lovely guy and a really nice fella. But something needs to change. I don't know if we've now gone too far and he can pull this one back. You would have to say that it looks to be the case, because Estonia is somewhere that he should have been on the podium. He absolutely should. That car, you know, the pace that Greensmith found in that car early doors when everybody was still in the event, to do a fourth and a fifth fastest time, it counts. And you could look at it and say, oh yeah, but it was only the super special that he was fourth quickest on. It doesn't matter. You know, last year, Teemu not quickest on to super special in Estonia last year? Everybody's, you know, pushing a little bit and having a go. The car's got the speed.
He's had these unfortunate mistakes that he's repeated and repeated, and he's now got himself into this situation where he's just a bit terrified. Look, a reset is possible if he gets the opportunity.
How, George?
How
would you suggest he does it? Does he step away for a bit, or, you know, and go and do something different? Or
you don't need to step away. You just need to actually. I would say go to a sporting psychologist, actually, is the way to do it.
Yeah.
Fins aren't really big into that, are they, George?
Well, they are, actually. Tommy had a sporting psychologist.
I would say...
Marcus had a sporting psychologist.
True. I'm looking back further, a few years earlier.
Yari Matti certainly had a sporting psychologist.
Sorry. Yeah. I couldn't imagine Marco Alenco to a sporting psychologist. No, absolutely.
There's where you're exactly wrong, because he was the king and he would be his own psychologist.
Yes, that's very true. Absolutely true. No, I was completely wrong. But, you know, the one potentially saving grace for Teemu is the fact that he's backed by Timo Jokke. And I'm sure, you know, if Timo Jokke believes, then he will find a way. But somebody just then mentioned, you know, taking a break, doing something else. Is Esa-Pekka Lappi not testament to exactly that? He took a break, went away, built himself a house, came back, and look what he did. You know, admittedly, actually, I was going to say in a different kind of competitive field, arguably in an even more competitive field, with young guns coming through in Rally 2, WRC 2, and people like Mikkelsen and Osberg, he came and he wiped the floor with them.
He did.
Interesting.
But he's still not sitting with the opportunity.
No, but he's putting himself in a far stronger position than Lappi is right now.
He's further up the list. Way further up the list.
He is, definitely.
For the seats that are available.
I need to point something out to you all. I think for the first time, this is about the 54th podcast that we've made for dirtfish.com. And for the first time ever, we've actually gone through our list and ticked everything off. No, we've got one more thing to add to it. But so far, we have actually ticked off nearly everything on the list, apart from Thierry Neuville. Is that what you were going to say there, Cole?
Yeah, because I'm outraged by it. I'm completely outraged by it.
By what?
And I'm not I'm outraged by the fact that...
That he did it or that he got fined?
Not that he did it, because every single rally driver... David made this point to me on Sunday evening.
Sorry, we should explain this as well in case someone's going...
So he's late into the penultimate stage. Something has happened and we're yet to get to the bottom of it. Adamo says...
So he
was late. And remember, he's in a reasonably close battle with Seb Ogier for third place. And you know, and he is clearly going to be late to the next time control. As it turned out, he was under a minute late, 10-second penalty. But to do that, to get to that time control, he had to drive flat out, and I mean flat out, 190 kilometres an hour. That car won't go an awful lot faster than that, on a public road where the limit was 90 kilometres an hour. Now, that is utterly reckless.
Yeah.
Utterly reckless. But that is a decision that the driver makes. And the driver makes that decision based on a number of different inputs. As I say, it's all about decision-making. It's all about choices. Now, I have no issues with that. As I had no issues with Sebastian... I don't have issues with a driver choosing to make that decision. I have issues with...
On a public road.
Choosing to make that decision. What my point is that until the FIA stewards take serious action against a top driver and make them think. So faced with that situation again, either Ogier or Neuville or Tanak or any of our top drivers are going to say, well, I'm going to get a fine, a slap across the wrist, but I hold on to my third place. They need to be penalising these massive transgressions with either with points or time penalties. Points or time penalties are the only thing that will stop drivers from behaving in that kind of manner. If you know you're going to make a, you're going to get a minute's time penalty for driving at that utterly reckless speed, you're just going to take your time and get there, and maybe get a 30-second penalty for being 3 minutes late. You know, it's bonkers. The stewards are letting themselves down. They are letting themselves down. They are letting the FIA down. The FIA campaign for road safety does not sit with a fine for driving at 100 kilometres an hour over the speed limit. Something needs to change.
I think you just need to clarify there, Colin. You don't, when you said you don't have a problem with the drivers making their own decisions to do that, you know, fundamentally we do. You know,
I think what Colin, can I just clarify, you don't mind them doing it so long as they're punished appropriately.
Yeah, but we've got to mind them doing
it.
It
won't happen.
How can we accept that?
I understand.
How can we accept that?
I get Colin's point that if they're going to do it, they do need to be punished massively.
Because
I love the phrase they use, they could not avoid overspeeding in order not to be late at time control 23. Well, you can avoid overspeeding. You cannot claw back. Yes, you're looking to claw back second. We all know that. But effectively, if you've got a problem that has put you in the wrong place to be somewhere some minutes down the line, yes, you can speed to get there, but that's still not working.
The only reason they speed is because they know they're going to get away with it.
100%.
And they know they're going to get away with it until the stewards actually, you know, Ollie Christian Baby was a silly boy and their team, they were badly advised, but he got a 6-month ban for something which was a little bit grey.
No, that wasn't grey, Cole. That was absolutely black and white, 100%.
Well, he'll I agree with you, but he'll say it was a little bit grey. But he got a 6-month ban for breaking COVID rules, breaking COVID rules. You know, and they can turn around and say, well, you know, he could have infected X number of people. Well, goodness knows what would have happened if someone had pulled out in front of a rally car doing 190 kilometres an hour. Goodness knows what could have, if we're talking what could have happened, which is why Baby got his 6-month ban. What could have happened with a rally car doing over 100 kilometres an hour over the speed limit on a public road? I'm sorry. We have to be firm with this.
You know,
we
talked a lot about, you know, and we jokingly said, you know, it used to be great. It used to be incredible. I remember, you know, going out on events with my father and you'd see, you know, Colin on a British Championship round where they'd change the gearbox at the side of the road and he would come blatting past at ridiculous speed, and it was just incredible. It was fantastic, but it was also 20 years ago, at least.
And many fewer cars on the road.
Exactly, Lise. And, you know, we live in a different world today. This is not acceptable. It is not.
And the FIA are in a different position. The campaign for road safety is very much their number one
priority. And they are tracking these cars. So it's very, very, very straightforward here. You know, if you speed in a pit lane, in a Formula One race, you get penalised. If you speed on a road section, you get penalised. If you do it 3 times, you lose your licence for the next event. It's straightforward.
I understood that the stewards were slightly limited in what they could do. I don't believe they could give a time penalty.
Then the rules need to change.
That's what I understood. They can change that rule. That's dead easy to change it or interpret it differently. If I'd been the steward, I certainly would have been trying to interpret it differently.
I'd have given them
a 30-second penalty. There you go.
Yeah. Right.
End off.
Yeah, and
bang,
that, and that'll stop it happening in the future,
exactly.
George.
It'll stop it happening.
It's difficult though, George.
Sorry, Terry, I like you,
but George, you know, don't you? You've been in exactly that position where you've got 3 minutes to do a 6-minute road section, and it's the mindset of the driver is just to crack on, isn't it?
Absolutely.
And
unless they know they're going to get severely punished for
it. I mean, I presume it was a relatively quiet bit of road. I mean, maybe in relative terms, and we're not trying to quantify it particularly, but, you know, I mean, maybe it was a very, very quiet bit of road with not very many junctions.
How many times has he been along that
exactly
road,
the
though,
opposite.
George, to know that as a fact, you know? And the reason that... But George,
at least four times, Lisa. So.
But George, there's a reason. There is also a reason why the speed limit was set for that.
I'm not trying to quantify it in those terms. He's made the judgment. We're all in agreement. There's a penalty. Bang, done. They won't do it again. There's a tracker in the car. They can't get away with it. I mean, but it's, he knew it as he was doing it, he was going to get caught.
But we don't need.
But he also had an idea that, well, I'll get a 10-second road penalty for being late. I'll limit it to that. If it's 20, that's me back in the clutches of Seb. So that's me lost my third place. So there's no point, you know, everything to lose at that point. There's a chance I won't get a time penalty from the stewards. I'll just get a fine and a reprimand. I'm going to go for
it. But
that's exactly what he did.
And guess what? It paid off. But every great now decision. And then, George, good decision from
Thierry. Every now and then, our sport demonstrates that we are back with the dinosaurs here. You know, we have the data on this. You know, you don't, as to go reference a Formula One race again, you don't get drivers trying to beat the speed limiter. They just don't, because they know they can't. So why?
Because they know. Yeah, and why are our guys still under the illusion that we can get away with it?
Because they can. Yeah. Because, and we have quite clearly established that they can get away with it. As a factory driver in that situation, what you are absolutely keeping everything crossed for is a
lenient steward.
A fine, any sort of fine. You know, I mean, whether it's 2 grand or 20 grand or even 50 grand, you know, it's manufacturer points. It keeps you in the driver's championship.
But here's the thing, though.
Give them a time penalty.
Would a driver further down the running order have been treated the same way?
I don't think so.
It would have flagged up a speeding offence. They would. Take a look down the stewards' reports. Yeah, you find it all the time.
Yeah,
you do. Okay. You find it all the time. Yes. So Lisa, yes, everybody gets.
But
treated.
Interestingly, though,
nobody gets away with anything.
We've now got Ogier, Tanak, and Neville on a suspended ban for next year. For very different reasons. Road accident for Ogier.
Yeah.
Tanak was the punctures in Monty. I mean, how's that? You know, we've seen footage of Tanak, who Tanak drove very, very sensibly down that bit of road on three freely rotating tyres. How is that the same as driving at 190 kilometres an hour through a 90 kilometre an hour? Yeah. There's questions that need to be answered here. 100%.
And if you've got questions that need to be answered, hashtag Dirtfish Rally is the way to get in touch with us. See what I did there? Very smooth.
Yeah.
That's called a segue. On to the big thanks for listening to this episode of Spin the Rally Pod. Colin, David, George, thank you very much. Thank you for getting up early.
Not a problem.
No bother. That's got me out and about nice and early this morning, at least. Thank you.
Excellent. Thank you very much.